Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name's Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Busker. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm hanging in there, Dan.
Aren't we
by
all?
More than a thread, yes.
Yeah. No, we all have a couple threads left. It's the off season now, though. So, like,
you know, it doesn't feel like the off season to me.
You told me that you're going to the Senior Bowl and Super Bowl week, yes. So that's different. But for those of us who our focus is college football, it's the off season. Now we're like stretching out a little bit, relaxing. You know,
oh my God,
it's all good. Yeah, I mean, it works for me. But you're still busy for the time being.
Yeah, it's funny because you feel like the national championship is kind of this end, you know, period to the season. And what a chef's kiss it was, I feel like, and especially in that second half. But
quarter, yeah.
Right, well, and everybody says that. Okay. But the second half as a whole was just such a different vibe. But anyways, you feel like that's the exclamation point, but then you don't realize like there's things like the, you know, Tropical Bowl, the Senior Bowl, the
Hula Bowl just happened.
The Hula Bowl, yeah,
exactly. At the bounce house again. Yep.
Exactly. So you have all these events that are important to college football because it's a send off for these guys that we spent all year talking about and their transition and where they're going to fit in the NFL. And it's this beautiful union, January and February, of NFL and college, where we get to see the future, you know, and our opinion as college writers is important to NFL people for once. So I like this time of year, but there really isn't an end to anything ever.
Well, that's fair, because like I know that people who like cover the coaching carousel closely were like so relieved when it was over, and then Hawaii just opened up too.
Oh my God. I was talking about that with my mentor Kevin Gemmel, who used to write for ESPN, and he's really good friends with Graham because he covered him at ASU were, you know, and he was friends with his wife on Facebook, and he texted me and he was just like, Todd Graham, like, what is happening? Why? And I don't understand it, because the guy that I know from all these years of coaching in the Pac-12, I don't understand. I cannot reconcile who this person is that they're saying said all these things and was awful. You know,
I mean, the state Senate, when you have a state Senate hearing about your conduct and how the program is being run, that's just, it's time to, I don't know Todd Graham at all. I don't personally know him at all. I do take allegations of that stuff pretty seriously, because I just don't like to downplay it ever, because you don't know. And I just think you take it seriously and look into it. I don't know. I don't know why he took that job. It is an incredibly difficult job. I don't really know anything about where they're going to go next. I know some people say bring back June Jones, bring in Timmy Chang, who was a great quarterback there. I just don't know what you do next, because that program's in such dire financial straits, dude. That's a mess out there of a program. And I love Hawaii football, so I hate that that's what it is right now.
It's insane.
But exactly, though. But those stories happen in the offseason, so the coaching carousel is going again. Really, like you mentioned, like all the draft prep, it's going to be the next month of all of a sudden these draft and like analysts are going to be talking about Kyle Hamilton. Like, look at this play he made against Florida State that I've been talking about for months, because,
you know,
So yeah, you're right. We do have, it just changes gears a little bit. It's a little bit less all the
time. Yeah. It's like a shift. Yeah.
I think we're downshifting from like fourth gear to third or second gear. June's like,
I've never driven stick. So I don't know. Well,
it's fine. I've only ever played the arcade games, because it doesn't seem like a skill I need in the modern world. Don't mean to brag. Automatic.
Yes. Love that for you.
I know. Isn't it special for me? You had mentioned, though, that the national championship game, you were actually there. So I was wondering if you could just, before we dive into some AAC talk, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, a matchup we've seen before. And I think heading into it, everybody was, I mean, not everybody was excited. A lot of, you know, people on the other side of the country were excited. You know, if you talk to people about that game out here, it was just kind of like, again, here we go. But after all the Cincinnati hype, which, you know, didn't pan out. I thought we talked about this. I thought they were fine compared
to any other semifinal team.
But I agree with you, but they had to be better than fine. It's like, I get it, because as a female in this industry, I have to not just be good. I have to remember every player from the 1950s to be considered. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
I do, just, because otherwise, oh, you don't know who Otto
exactly. That you don't really care, right? Exactly. So I get it. I can relate to them in that it's unfair that it's this bar, but it's the reality of the situation. Is you're carrying a lot on your shoulders, and you had to be perfect, and they just weren't, and that's okay. You know, but does it have a ripple effect into letting, you know, group of five schools in? Yeah, of course. It sucks, but that's what it is. So I think after all that excitement, we look at the Alabama-Georgia game and we're like, okay, there's this great storyline between Saban and Kirby Smart and what's going to happen, master and apprentice, which is what I wrote about. The atmosphere was incredible. Indy was freezing, by the way. It was like negative and
yeah,
I didn't bring a coat. I was like, no.
Well, that was a mistake.
Yeah. But Kim and I were like, how cold? She lives in Newark, by the way. And she didn't bring a coat either. And we were both like, how cold is it? 7 degrees, really? You know,
it's very cold, especially if it's windy at all.
It was freezing. We took a scooter from our apartment to lunch one day and almost died. So cold weather kept a lot of people indoors. But I will say this, the committee, the college football committee, did a great job with the events. Mm-hmm. They rolled out the convention center. Like they had, it was incredible for the fans.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's awesome. Because I know there's some people complaining about India's location, like specifically the Atlanta Journal Constitution. They had a whole article, cold and expensive Indy to host like Southern Georgia.
Okay. Expensive that relative to.
That was the title.
That's like expensive relative to certain places, but I think for the most part it was break for me.
Anyways, what I was gonna say though is I've never been to Indianapolis, but all I've heard is it's, you know, a little bit of a boring city, but a pretty efficient one.
It was like, fine.
It does the job it's supposed to.
It's nice and it's clean. And if you live in a place like New York or San Francisco or anywhere like Florida, like I think it's gonna feel like a more congenial Midwestern clean city, like a good atmosphere. People were friendly. You know, there's good bars. We went to St. Elmo Steakhouse and that was obviously a big draw for people. The food is incredible. Cause you have, we went to this place. Oh my gosh. You ever go to Indy, go to the food truck hall. It's in, it's outside of downtown. And, I tweeted about it. So you can go to my Twitter and check it out. But basically it's an indoor food truck hall and you can get food, all kinds of different foods in this one place. And it was the best food I ever, ever tasted. I did a ranking on my Twitter. So if you want to go check that out, it was incredible.
I love places like that. The Orlando area has several places where it's just like a food truck area. They're mostly outdoor because, you know, they don't have to be indoor.
Yeah, exactly. So if you think Indianapolis is boring, that's on you for not getting out and exploring the city and what it has to offer. We stayed at the near the media hotel. You know, it was great running into people in the hallways. You got to see all the announcers and former legendary coaches. I got into an argument with David Pollack outside while he was waiting for his food to be delivered. So that was really fun for me.
Would you walk up and just shout Roll Tide at him?
No. So this goes way back, but we have a history. And I told him one time that I thought the Pac-12 was the best conference in college football because years ago, this was like 3 years ago.
Was good. Or
top to bottom, the Pac-12 is better than most conferences because you have a bottom team that can actually win games. Okay. Excuse me, Vanderbilt and once upon a time, Arkansas. So at the time we had this argument, things were different. Okay. Stanford hadn't fallen off the wagon. USC wasn't dealing with what they're
Arizona
dealing with.
Arizona couldn't win a game this year. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yes. The last 2 or 3 years have not been good. But prior to that, which is when I started this argument, I think the bottom team was what? Oregon State. And they still won 4 games. So look back 3 years ago.
I don't know off the top of my head, but Oregon State feels correct for
that. I'm telling you it's true because I was referencing it. Okay. And Colorado, like those teams still win games, but you still have Vanderbilt 3 years
ago. Colorado's weird. They randomly will win like 9 games every fifth year.
Exactly. So, and that's, I think, because the level of competition across the board is just good. It's hard to play.
I think it's a little bit more equal. Everyone's a little bit more equal.
Great. So yes, the Pac-12 doesn't have an Alabama. They don't have a Clemson. Yes, we understand that. Yeah. But that doesn't make them a bad conference. In fact, I would love to see Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, whoever come into the Pac-12 and survive a full slate, which I don't think they could. So anyways, that's neither here nor there. And we got in an argument, whatever. Fast forward to game day. I'm walking in the hallways and I saw him and I was like, we crossed paths and I was like, Pac-12. And he's like, sucks. Just yelled it out. So that was really fun. But yeah, I digress. Anyways, the Lucas Oil Stadium was incredible.
Should have opened the door for the game.
I mean,
make those two play a winter game.
The fans were loud. The rivalry between the fans was great. There were some guys with signs next to me, Georgia fans, that were hilarious. It was good atmosphere. Was it good. Clemson LSU from New Orleans? No, but
was it because on TV, it looked more Georgia than Alabama. Was that how it was there?
It depends on the angle they show. Where I was sitting, I was in an auxiliary press box. So I was actually out in the stands, which was awesome because you get a lot of environment feeling. And I was in a Georgia section.
Okay,
so where I was, it was a lot of Georgia. And then across the way was all the Alabama. And it's all red, so it's really hard to tell. But I would say at times the Georgia fans were louder. Now, maybe that's just because they're a little rowdier than Alabama fans. I will say that.
They were throwing,
I don't know if you saw my video, but they were throwing beer bottles onto the field after a play call they didn't like by the referees. And then they proceeded to dump full beers on the photographers in the end zone.
It was wild. Yeah, I did see that.
And they were confirmed Georgia fans. So, you know, it's.
Georgia fans don't hide that they're Georgia fans.
Right. I think it's weird to say, but Alabama fans were more civilized.
Alabama fans have been there before.
That's another thing.
I was happy for Georgia fans because it had been so long for all of 24-ish hours. And then they started to annoy me just on social media where it was like, all right, you can all be quiet now. Like, calm down.
Yeah. Kirby Smart after the game was a lot. He got up there and said some things like talking about there's going to be some property destruction in Indy tonight. And that
I don't think Kirby's the smartest guy off the field.
It was not great, that part. The coolest part was Quavo being there. He had bet Drake, I think $150,000. I don't know, a lot of money they bet on the game. And Quavo, being a Georgia fan, was out on the field after for the celebration, was in the locker room with the guys. Mm-hmm. He had a picture with him and Stetson Bennett. I think the other funny part was Bennett's interview the next day.
On Good Morning America, where his eyes were still closed.
Clearly drunk. And I can't confirm or deny that, but I did talk to one of my buddies who was with Quavo in the tweet suite. Yeah. And it is confirmed that they were out. I mean, he was pulling on Pappy Van Winkle after the game.
Yeah. I don't know how he made it up for that interview.
Yeah. I'm shocked. We didn't get out of there till about 2:00.
Yeah.
And then we stayed up all night. We went to the airport at 5:00. We just stayed up because there was just no point. So
yeah,
it was crazy. Yeah,
that's a long night.
It was, but it was incredible. You know, the second half was the game we deserved to see. You know, I was surprised because I really thought, you know, Bryce was gonna do it, but they put so much pressure on him and he just couldn't. Well,
the injury to Jameson Williams,
of course, and then the whole controversy with that, he wanted to play and Alabama actually,
he had an ACL tear. They did the right thing, not letting him play.
I agree. And I think that goes to speak, you know, everybody saying, oh, they don't care about these kids. You know, they
do. Some people do. You know,
Nick Saban cares, you know.
I was going to say, it's hard to make general sweeping statements like that, and it's hard to make them in either direction. But yeah, no, Nick Saban, I think, showed this year that he does really care about his players.
Yeah, I think we saw a side of him because he's getting older, you know.
He's less robotic than I think he used to be.
More compassionate, you know. And you saw it with him and Kirby. That, to me, that was the best part of the game, is watching them interact afterwards, mm-hmm. hearing them speak about each other in the post games. And there was no anger or bitterness. There was just admiration and respect. Mm-hmm. And I think it was such a refreshing thing to see, with all of the coaching scandal and all of the bad stuff going on in college football. That right there for me was like the moment of the game where these two coaches really respected each other. And honestly, without Nick Saban, you don't have this Georgia championship. No. So I think acknowledging that is important, and Kirby Smart did. And it was kind of cool. Like, if you're an SEC fan, this was just amazing. You know, this was top for you. So the rest of us, it was like,
expand the playoff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, so like an expanded playoff wouldn't have changed who played in it this year, but maybe it would have made the preceding games more entertaining. I don't know. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's, or maybe over time, if more teams can get into the playoff, the talent distributes a little bit more evenly, where not everyone's going to four or five schools that can actually make it. You know,
I don't know what the future is going to hold for anything, but I know that they were meeting at the,
they did nothing. Jim Phillips is blocking
everything. Yeah. Right, and all the reporters were trying to cover it, and everybody's trying to, I was like, what? We're not going to get anything out of this.
Like, I don't really want to talk about playoff expansion right now, because it's inevitable and just being delayed by, in my opinion, just different egos who got bruised. And I think Jim Phillips is trying to force Notre Dame into the ACC, which that's a conspiracy, but it's something I truly believe, that he's trying to make it just a little bit harder for them to get in so that they might join, but that's not happening.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the AAC instead of that whole sideshow that would be.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we're just going to do a quick recap now of the AAC season, go team by team, just now that's sunk in a little bit. What we thought about, what was good, what was bad, you know, what we think the future holds, just a little light conversation about each team. I'm going to go kind of top school, bottom school, and meet in the middle, I think, for our,
for
our order. Yeah, change it up a little bit, because I don't like going top school, like Cincinnati, great year, Houston, great year. Then by the end, you're like, yeah, that stunk. Yeah, that was rough. Bad year for them.
Yeah. Are you going to start top or bottom?
I'm going to start top, then go bottom. And I should point out that this is based on the standings that the AAC's website has. So the bottom three all have the same 1-7 conference record, but it's just alphabetical order. No, it's not.
No,
never mind. I'm just going to the order. I don't know what order.
It's by their overall. So
And then USF Tulane. Gotcha. Anyways, let's start with Cincinnati. That's just.
Actually, you know, what's interesting is I think because Tulane has the worst home record. South Florida was 2-4.
Quickly expose yourself. Does T come before S in the dictionary or not?
QRSTUV. No, S come. Temple should be South Florida.
Yeah, South Florida. That's alphabetical.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's alphabetical. Come on.
So Temple should be below, but they're not, because they were 3-9. They played less games.
No, they're both 2-10 according to this. 3-9 for Temple.
Temple's 3-9.
Yeah, 3-9
overall, and then they're 2-4 home, 1-5 away. But see how, I think.
I don't know. We're going with what they've got, though.
That's weird.
It's not the end of the world. It only makes so much difference. This is complete side of thing. I've got the playoff game on mute right now. Some Cardinals players not moving on the field, so that's bad.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I can't tell who it is. That's a whole other side thing. That's just in the background here. Yeah, that looked really bad. Cincinnati season, though. The Bearcats, obviously the undefeated regular season conference champion, mm-hmm. made it to the playoff. I understand your viewpoint that they needed to do more. I think they did it just as well as anyone else does. And I agree that there's a double standard, but I don't care in terms of how I personally judge this team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't say this was anything but a complete success of a season. They hit everything that they thought that they might have a chance to at the start of the year. They got some help along the way, don't get me wrong, to make the playoff, because if Oklahoma State gains half a yard more at the end, mm-hmm. the Cowboys are a playoff team instead of Cincinnati, most likely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It helped that Clemson took a step back and the ACC lost its spot. Helped that the Pac-12 remained the way the Pac-12 is, where it eats itself alive, and Oregon couldn't get out of its own way and just beat Utah. You know?
Yeah.
They did the things that they went out to do this year. They beat Indiana on the road, who turned out to be terrible, but not the point. And they went into Notre Dame, who turned out to be very, very good, and won at Notre Dame. And that was, a huge season, probably the best season in program history, and that needs to be applauded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing that what they did isn't great. It's just they had to be perfect and they couldn't be. And
I understand what you're saying. If the final score of that game was 27-24 and they lost, it would have been different. But they lost by 3 touchdowns.
That was rough. I will say this though. So when I was in Indy, we went to the reception for Luke Fickell as coach of the year. Yep. And we spoke to him a little bit about, you know, different things. We were able to actually interact with him in person, which was great because everything else was virtual, which is the worst. Mm-hmm. And he had some really interesting things to say about rule changes. He said that if he could change one rule, it would be about targeting. He was like, I tweeted out a video of it.
That's where I saw it.
I thought it was really interesting. It's definitely worth checking out his words on that. But he was basically like, we have to stop taking players off the field like that.
I think he's 100% right. I think it should be like a flagrant foul in basketball where there's a flagrant one and a flagrant two. Like you can do it once and then you get kind of like a warning, or the way unsportsmanlike conduct is done where you get one and the second's where you get ejected. Because a lot of times these are incidental, targeting calls. Like guys just sometimes they go and they try to strike the chest area of an opponent. Maybe they do dip their head a little, but it's the running back, say, who dips his head into the head. And you know what I mean? Like those are just really difficult situations, or, any 50-50 call. It's awful to see games change because like a team's top linebacker has to go out because of a targeting call, which each conference seems to officiate differently anyway. So I think he's completely right.
I thought it was great that he took that stand and said that. The other thing though, I personally asked him this, he was talking about NIL and how, he's excited for the guys. And he was talking about his son and NIL deals and whatnot. And I said, well, coach, if you were playing during a time when there was NIL, and I asked this of a lot of coaches, what would your deal be? What would be a brand that you would hook on with or something you would be? And he didn't really have an answer, but he did say his first initial gut reaction when I asked it was Subway sandwiches, subs, which I thought that's so Cincinnati of him. Like I couldn't.
Well, not even Skyline Chili though. That'd be way more Cincinnati.
I mean, I guess, and then he was quickly like, I don't know, I don't think I would have been a big enough deal. They always say that, but I like to see what their gut reaction is. And I thought that was funny. A little tidbit for Cincinnati.
Speaking, not to get sidetracked, but speaking of NIL, did you see Stetson Bennett like less than a day after the national championship was out there for like Great Clips or Sports Cuts or one of those like chain barbershop that's super popular in Georgia? He's like, I had to look good for my like interviews after the game. I'm like, God, come on, Stetson. It's so disgustingly Georgia. But yeah, like sometimes you just hit an area. Like Bo Nix at Auburn with Milo Sweet Tea. Like that's a very southern thing to be like promoting. Like, so there are those like kind of niche things at different schools you can find. Like
I
could do Four River Smokehouse so easy, which if you don't know is a chain of barbecue places in the area.
I did not know that.
I realized it as I said it, but yeah.
I should have asked him what his go-to Subway sandwich is, but maybe next time I see him, I
will. Yeah, next time. I mean, anything
else? All right, that's what I got.
You're in the Big 12 in a couple years' time, top-ranked recruiting class again in the conference. For next year, they're going to have to do a reload at a lot of positions, so I think they'll take a step back is my initial reaction, but I don't think it'll be a big step back because they've got a lot of talent. Oh, and a weird transfer thing. Ben Bryant, who was on their team, transferred to Eastern Michigan, transferred back to Cincinnati this year. He'll probably be the quarterback next year.
Good luck and Godspeed. That's what I say to Cincinnati.
Yeah, they'll probably be very good next year too. Anyways, Tulane, 1-7 in conference, 2-10 overall. Incredibly, incredibly strange season with the hurricane completely derailing their first month or so of the year. Mm-hmm. Nearly beat Oklahoma, got blown out by Ole Miss. Just a weird season where they look competitive against teams they probably shouldn't have and then didn't show up to other games.
Yeah.
We love Tulane on this podcast, but it was a bad year overall.
I do love Tulane. I do. I still love Tulane.
You don't have to say we.
Okay. We love like Tulane.
It's a big
Tulane. I have been trying to get to the bottom of it ever since the season ended. I am no closer to understanding what happened after talking to players and it is just, I think even to them, it's I've talked to an offensive lineman who we had in the podcast, Corey Devlin, and he he just, I mean, he had no answers for it.
No, he didn't understand it either. I don't blame him for not understanding it, because
nobody understands
it.
Like,
I looked at their schedule and said, this is probably going to be a difficult year to take a step forward in the wins loss column at the start of the year. I thought, hey, I really like Tulane's talent this year, but man, it's a tough out of conference schedule. You know, they're always probably going to lose to Oklahoma and Ole Miss. I thought they'd beat UAB. But like, I didn't think that like getting over that like 6-6-ish mark was likely to happen, because it was just so, you know, tough of a schedule this year. I think if I had to take a guess at what happened, was that the hurricane set them back, you know, yeah. In terms of their preparation, in terms of their rhythm and flow of the season. And then when you're dealing with just like making sure guys know where they're supposed to be on time, and like guys who know that their friends and family are okay in Louisiana, that sometimes you just can't take the time you need to figure out, hey, what were the things we did wrong in our first game against Oklahoma, say? What were the things we did right, and grow from those you had? So I think they were a month behind in growing. That's yeah. all. As the season goes on, I think that's what it was. I don't think that they'd ever, anyone at Tulane would ever say that's what it is, because no, that's not a thing that people like to admit that they're behind for some reason. But yeah. I think that hurricane had a bigger effect on their season than anyone would say.
That is really the only thing we can hang our hat on at this point, because player-wise, they had a lot of talent on both sides of the ball.
I think
Pratt should have been better.
He should have taken
this
step forward that he didn't. Yeah,
he didn't. But we know that he's capable of it, because there were times that you would see it, flashes of it in games.
Very capable. He's got a turnover issue the same way that I think Clayton Tune had a turnover issue last season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love Willie Fritz as a head coach. I really do. I think he's a great head coach. I think he made a offensive coordinator hire in Chip Long that really wasn't working out. Chip Long's moved on to Georgia Tech. I don't really know that decision from Chip Long, other than him saying, hey, that didn't work out year one. Maybe I should hit the reset button on my own career. But Georgia Tech's a sinking ship for him to jump on, so I don't really know why he would go there. You know, like, I don't see how much longer Jeff Collins is going to keep that job as a head coach. That's a whole other side thing, but he's not turned it around at all.
Hopefully they just improve from a, I think coaching standpoint would help, because I saw a lot of let's do this, even though it's not working.
Business. I mean, I again,
and I don't like that.
I hate to ride Chip Long, but I've on the show said multiple times that he was successful at Notre Dame, but there's plenty of people in the building who were not super fond of him. And that's
funny, because the players said that they liked him. But I don't know.
The offensive lineman at Notre Dame seemed to like Ian Book specifically did not. From what that's all rumor. I don't have like Ian Book telling me that, but like that's right. What it kind of was like, hey, this is the thing that's going on here, is that he doesn't get along with Brian Kelly. He doesn't get along with the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Offensive line really liked him. I think it was a style thing, to be honest. But I don't know. It didn't work either way.
We'll have to see it better next year, hopefully. I mean, they can only go up, so that's... Yeah,
I will say this, the defense showed a lot of improvement as the season went on. I think that Michael Pratt still should take that step forward next year. Since he didn't this year, I expect him to.
Mm-hmm.
New OC, though, that's tough. 3 OCs in your first 3 years in college is not easy to deal with.
Yeah.
No, that's a difficult way to adjust and learn. Like, we might say, why didn't he take a step up? Maybe he just was learning a new offense again, and he had to hit the reset button. You know, it's tough.
Yeah.
Tough to say exactly what went wrong, because I think there's a lot of factors that go into something like that. But yeah, I agree. Should be better next year.
Yeah.
Want to talk about your boy, Dana? Everyone's boy, Dana. All of our greasy haired.
I like how everyone tried to say Brandon Jones was leaving and then he didn't.
Yes,
I know we talked about that, but
I was going to say one more time though, for the people in the back, Emily had it down pat that he wasn't.
No love for that. I also got no love for my Marshall pull. Yeah,
Grant Wells.
Yep. No love.
Again, for everyone in the back. Houston, though, undefeated in conference record, lost in the conference championship game, obviously, to Cincinnati. Lost week one to Texas Tech when they really probably shouldn't have, because that wasn't a great Texas Tech team. And you blew a halftime lead. Won the
Birmingham. How long do you think that's going to haunt him?
I think it's already done.
You think they're over it now? I feel like they're going to look back on that as they start this next season.
I think 12 wins is a lot of wins for a team that hasn't had a year that good since Tom Herman was there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that 12-2 feels really, really good. And I just think you get over it pretty quick, unless once you get to the Big 12, if you're Houston, because once again, they're one of those teams head to the Big 12 too. You go and lose to Texas Tech again a couple times. Then you're like, wait a minute, does Texas Tech have his number or something like that? But I don't really think I don't think it haunts Houston going into next year. I think what haunts Houston more is, you know, the guys moving on. I wish I could remember if Clayton Tune was using like an extra year to come back or not. I don't know that I've actually seen it. You know, that's the tough right now. The extra COVID year is killing me because I can't keep track of who's back and who's not. Like
that's
across
actually a really good question. I'm not sure I've heard either way about him.
I haven't heard either way about a number of guys. Like just if he's back, then he's not.
I mean, there's just no.
If he hasn't said he's coming back, then right. I assume he's not.
See, I would think the opposite. I would think that if he hasn't said he's leaving.
For everyone who doesn't care, the extra COVID year is absolute murder on people who are trying to do any sort of analysis of a roster because you just don't know who's back and who's not until it's like summer camp. Transfer portal does the same thing. I love that. I think the transfer portal is good for the players and good for the game in the long run. It is absolute murder on trying to figure out who plays for who, you know? I think during the season had Houston beaten Cincinnati for the conference championship, they would have been haunted by that loss, but they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't come particularly close to it. So I don't think it's going to haunt them into the offseason. I think they're going to take a bowl win over an SEC team. And, you know, that weird Birmingham Bowl trophy that Dana was like bringing around the city of Houston and hanging out at his house.
That was peak Twitter for me, was watching Dana Holgerson take pictures with that trophy in different places. I was loving it. I don't particularly care for Dana Holgerson all the time, as I'm sure.
He's a lot.
Most people don't, but I have to say that was peak for me. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dana's a really good offensive mind. I think as a human being, he's just a lot.
I'm seeing that he is going to return.
Okay,
and they're also going to get McCaskill back.
I knew that because he was only a freshman,
right? Obviously, and then Dell will also be back. So
we got good offensive pieces coming back to build on that. Then, you know,
yeah, I think they might be giving in way too early previews. People are going to look at them as a contestant for Cincinnati's crown.
Well, I mean, the thing, we know Desmond Ritter's moving on. We know that, you know, most of that, since the bigger thing is Myjai Sanders, you know, Sauce Gardner, Kobe Bryant, like a lot of that defense, a lot of those key guys you're going to have to replace them. And even if you got talent behind them, replacing them with that much talent is just not easy to do. So that's why since
you got to miss Marcus Jones, though, that's going to be.
Absolutely.
That's my Mr. Steal Your Girl, Marcus Jones. I love him.
He's going to make an NFL team really happy with everything he can do. Yes,
he will. I can't wait to watch him.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, as long as Cincinnati builds on the goods from positives from this year, then
they got the good.
Terrible word choice. But yeah, as long as they can build on this season, they should be in really good shape for next season. You know, Dana's not recruiting as well as I think he should be doing, but he's also recruiting well for the conference. I'm going to say this really quickly because I want to remember to say it. The top three teams who finished 1-2-3 in the conference this year and the top 2-3 teams for recruiting, according to 247, because that's always who I use, are in both cases, it's the three teams leaving for the Big 12, which I think is not an accident by any means. They're the teams getting the best players right now, and they're the teams who are going to have the most talent. And they're probably
Came first, the chicken or the egg? Are they getting the best players because they announced they're leaving? Or
part of its location, all of them have invested heavily in facilities. Like they've all done the things to get the best players at this level and to get that promotion that other schools haven't. Like I know that USF fans don't like when I compare USF and UCF because I do it, in their opinion, one-sidedly. But UCF and
what other side is there? I don't care about either. That's a non-starter.
But UCF invested in facilities. UCF invested in a non-campus stadium. I know it's an aluminum box of a stadium, but it's got a lot of character at the same time. And it's fun to go to games there. And you know what? It's on campus and they fill it up, which is something USF does not do.
Yeah.
You know, and all those things contributed to better recruiting and to more success on the field because UCF also made better hires with guys like Scott Frost.
Yeah.
And, you know, And now they're going to the Big 12, and USF got passed behind, even though USF should have been the one going because they were in the Big East when UCF was in the MAC. You know what I mean? Or Conference USA. I don't know if USF was in the I'd have to double check my timelines, but the point is USF was in the Big East and UCF was going independent to MAC to CUSA at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know what I mean? Those are the three teams that did the work to get there. And now we're seeing it at both the top, this top of everything. Let's actually double down. Let's go talk about South Florida now, because they're the next on my list.
Moving up.
1-7, 2-10, same record as Tulane, but Tulane blew the doors off of them. Really close game for them to end the year against UCF in the bounce house. And what they would say was frustrating fashion to lose a game is the referees basically ruled that the clock ran out on them. And it was a complicated play. It was the whether or not the ball had been thrown by a quarterback who might've been sacked. And if it was thrown, it was intercepted. So you wanted it to be a sack if you were USF, but if it was a sack, then time ran out because you couldn't have lined up quick enough. And then they argued that UCF created delay of game by running around with the ball, but they thought they had intercepted. It was a mess of a play, but
yeah,
in the end they lost their, you know, they didn't really have an impressive win this year. The defense was abysmal, and they moved on from their defensive coordinator and are look who did they hire as a new one. It was a younger guy again.
I wanted
to do this as a very casual conversation, so I didn't like do extensive notes on everything I was gonna say, and this is my issue.
Charlie Weiss Jr. is headed to Ole Miss.
That's right, yeah, he's off to Ole Miss because Jeff Lebby, the Ole Miss OC, is off to Oklahoma.
Bob Shoop,
yeah,
was hired as defensive coordinator for USF.
Yep. Okay, got Bob Shoop. We'll see if he can turn it around with that defense that just in the week that they got, that they made the change, which was going from Tulane to UCF, there was notable improvement in what the defense was up to. So
USF is they played better as the season wore on. Now, to be
not to cut you off, is that was how they were the year before too, is they played better as the season wore on, and then it felt like they reset at the start of
I have no like starting point, but just coming in this year and seeing it, it was like, okay, they made adjustments, they got better, but you're right that it matters, like how, what's the jump next year? Like, are you going to take all these things and build on them and refuel, or are you going to start at zero again? Because you can't do that every year. You can't restart at zero.
The good news is they found their quarterback, I think, of the future. They found a really great wide receiver in Jimmy Horn, the kind of guy that you're like, you could build your offense around, even though he's a wide receiver, the way like Purdue did with Rondell Moore type talented, in my opinion. Other than that though, your line play needs a lot of work. Your defense needs a ton of work. I think your head coach, Jeff Scott, needs to really figure out his game management, because that's something he's been lacking.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of issues still there. They're starting to build more facilities, but that's still being a slow process.
Yeah, they have a lot of plans, which is good. So we'll see how that pans out, you know?
Yeah, they've had plans for, you know, I mean, they've had plans. You know, you hope that they start to get things going because you do want them to be competitive, because they should be. You know, when you're based in Tampa as a school, you should always be at least competitive. And that's something they've struggled to do. I do think they improve next season. I don't know how much though, because I don't know how much without like doing a deep, deep dive into it, I don't know how much I expect their defense to improve.
Yeah. You
know? That's just sort of where they're at for right now. The offense is going to be pretty good. At least if not good, very fun to watch next year though.
Yeah.
So there's always that you can hang your hat on. And by the way, Jeff Scott is obsessing with the transfer portal. Tons of guys coming in to the program.
Really? I like that though for him. I like that.
Yeah. Also obsessing with the transfer portal is Gus Malzahn at UCF, our next school to talk about, because they finished third in the conference at 5-3 with a 9-4 overall record. UCF fans are going to be mostly, I think UCF fans were realistic about where the team was, especially once Gabriel got hurt. But not hitting 10 wins always stings a little bit once you have a couple years in a row where you are at like 13-0, 12-1-ish records. You always want to be there. But 9-4, I think, for what this roster had, was pretty good. All things considered, the defense needed a hard reset after the Heupel era that kind of overlooked it. And yeah. the offense obviously was dealing with the injury to Dylan Gabriel and other players who had just graduated. So I was overall happy with this year. What was frustrating, I'm going to speak as like a fan really quickly.
Yeah.
What was frustrating was how they lost a couple of games. They shouldn't have lost to Navy. They just shouldn't have.
Yeah.
They blew a lead to Navy was really the tough part for me, because turnovers and just like sloppy play and lack of focus, the way they lost to Louisville. It's not that you lost to Louisville. I thought coming to the year that UCF was probably 3-1 out of conference. It's not that you lost to Louisville. It's the way you lost to Louisville, where you had victory and what's the phrase? They snatched snatched defeat from the jaws.
From the jaws of defeat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's reverse. You know, snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. And then traveling to Cincinnati and SMU, who didn't finish all that well in conference. You shouldn't have been blown out the way they got blown out. I mean, Cincinnati, maybe you do get blown out like that with a very young, like very raw Mikey Keene starting and just in over his head. Mm-hmm. But both those games were just, I don't think that they should have had their doors blown off just as bad as they did. Still, I think the future is really bright. At the same time, I lost the offensive coordinator GJ Kinney. I always get it wrong because GJ is such a weird kind of like,
I know that is
initials to me, mm-hmm. But he's going to be the incarnate Ward head coach. Replacing him. It's not really a big deal anyways, because Gus was like in charge of the offense as it was. In my mind, it wasn't that important, at least the loss. I mean, mm-hmm. OC is still OC and everything, but hitting the transfer portal hard, brought in John Rice Plumlee, the former Ole Miss quarterback turned wide receiver. Once Matt Corral took over, interested to see what becomes of him and Mikey Keene, if he's going to try to play quarterback or if it's to just be a general athlete. A lot of SEC guys, a few more guys from Auburn are coming over, just landed today as we speak, a tight end from the University of Florida, who was their starting tight end this past season. You know, a lot of guys like that.
Gamble. I'm excited for him. That's actually one of my favorite players from this last season. I saw that and I was like, love a good tight end.
So, yeah, I mean, and like I said, in a couple of years, you're at the Big 12, recruiting's going very well right now. So I'm liking everything that Gus is doing. Didn't like the way a couple losses broke, but what can you do? Do you have anything to add? Was that more than enough?
No, that was more than enough. On to the next.
Temple, 1-7 in conference, 3-9 overall with those wins over Akron and Wagner.
Next.
Do you really want to just skip over? Because
I mean, this is what I'll say.
Because we can. No.
I think it's just a wash. Like, it was clearly.
Yeah, I mean, it was a terrible year.
Yeah, it was just all the way around. And the head started at the head coach and trickled down from there. And they've now cleared everything out. It's like a wildfire. You got to let it burn through. Then you clear it out and you start over and you rebuild. So,
yeah, we'll see. I mean, I know Temple fans have been in my mentions on Twitter anytime I've said this, but it's a large rebuild project. We're talking 3 years before you expect anything.
I disagree in that I expect to see a difference next year in morale.
That's different.
But I'm not saying it necessarily translates into big wins, but I do think we see them scoring more points. I think we see them finishing games better. They clearly didn't want to be there. And that was so obvious every snap. So I do think we see 2 wins, 1 by moxie at least.
Yeah, I mean, without looking at their schedule, they probably
have an FCS. I didn't look at the schedule.
I was going to say, they probably have an FCS team. They almost always play a MAC team. And then they like to play those like Northeast FBS, like, or Northeast Power 5 teams usually for their other conference. You know what I mean? Like, and who knows?
I'm going to give them 2 conference wins because I think it's that much of a fresh breath. Breath of fresh air that they needed. That's what I feel. But, you know, who knows? None of us knows. I'll make this prediction. Yeah. I could look stupid or I could look brilliant.
Come August, whenever we get around to doing those predictions again for next season, maybe 0-12. Who knows?
No, I am going to stand by 2 conference wins based on moxie alone. That has nothing to do with talent. That I'll have to look at and assess later.
But. No, in what you said, you're right. There should be complete attitude shift. I think being too broad when I said that I don't expect to see change for like 3 years. To see change in the win-loss column for 2-3 years.
Yeah, you know I mean? Expect 2 wins. in the conference just from like mental wellness alone.
Okay. What do you think?
I know you don't agree and it's fine, but I'm telling you, I'm standing by.
I think they've just got talent deficits they need to like take the time to like fix, like to
Were the players better than we realized and they just were so depressed with everything going on?
They were better than we realized. All the starters just transferred out anyways.
Well, then good riddance if they weren't that good. Then they'll get some new ones, you know. These coaches that are coming in know that they have time, but they also know that the kind of program they want to run is not what was there. So we're going to see a complete 180. I'm excited to see what it's going to be. And the great thing is that other teams are not going to be able to game plan really that well until they see them, you know?
That'll be interesting. What did you think of the hire, Stan Drayden, who had never been a coordinator, as far as I can tell, running backs coach basically his entire career, but then includes sometime in Philadelphia back in the mid to late 90s at Penn and Villanova. And also, he was Ezekiel Elliott, Ohio State. He was just at Texas where they've got Bijan Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Some NFL experience, he was with the Packers. He was with the Bears. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. I'm a wait and see, super wait and see on it. It could work.
It's an older roster of coaches for sure. But you know, that there's pros and cons and the NFL angle is interesting because a lot of teams are doing that now, bringing in former NFL guys. So
I'm concerned that he's never been a coordinator of any kind. And I know that, say,
you know what? The Stanford coordinator was never a coordinator before. He was a quarterback. He went straight pretty much into coordinating. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Sam Pittman at Arkansas was an offensive line coach. You know what I mean? Before he was the head coach. It feels like he skipped a step, and he's 50 years old, Stan Drayden. So he didn't skip any steps. He's a grown man who has had a long career in coaching. Like, you know what I mean? But he's such a career running backs coach to me. That's like a little bit strange for me to see him in a different role. And I wonder how he fits into that other role. And he's got some really good running backs on his resume that he's coached. I just don't know that. I'm wait and see is all. Yeah. I'll say it again. I'm just wait and see. I don't have a strong opinion on it.
That's all that we can do with Temple. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to a little bit of a happier situation because this team was a huge surprise. ECU 5-3, 7-5 overall. That was a surprise.
It was fun. It was a fun year to watch.
I know we were both really high on Mike Houston as a coach.
Yeah.
This was a great year for him to get over that hump, get bowl eligible. Unfortunately, it got canceled because of COVID issues within the Boston College program.
Biggest bummer ever. So sad for Mike Houston.
Yeah, and we talked about like the frustration of those on our last show or two shows ago now, whatever it may have been. But you know what? They deserve to play in that game. The logistics of scheduling a new bowl game weren't there, especially with how late BC canceled, which I think is a whole other thing of, you know, why are you canceling at the last second? You knew you had COVID issues before that, but.
We talked about that. It was tough.
But they got over that hump at the same time, and they were a good team this year.
Mm-hmm.
They were, they took Houston to overtime. They probably should have beaten UCF, but they couldn't quite manage it because winning in Orlando is very difficult. Like, this is a team, App State beat them fair and square, but, they should have beaten South Carolina, who by all accounts was, that was a winning record in the SEC for South Carolina.
Right.
This was a good ECU team. I don't think people appreciate that enough. It's a team that returns a lot of talent on its offensive side of the ball, like good young running backs, good wide receiving core. Holton Ahlers is another guy who he's played 4 years now, but he has an extra year if he's choosing to use it. You know what I mean?
Holton, you can use
the transfer portal to fill in whatever gaps you feel like you have. If you need like offensive line help, or if you need to find a quick pass rusher, there is the transfer portal for that.
Yeah.
I think they're in a good position to take another jump forward next season on top of this one. I do.
I think that's going to be their bar for sure. And Houston is that kind of guy where every year he gets better and better. That's his track record. That's what he does. So
exactly. Yeah. The first couple years, it was kind of like what I just said about Temple. Temple's got 3 years or so before I really expect to see anything. It was 3 years or so before I expected to see anything out of Houston and ECU because it was just such a rebuild job that you can't expect year one to bring in your guys and just be good. You need to give them time to develop into the program and develop into college and become strong enough to compete at that level. And you know, it pays off if you wait. And I think ECU fans are some of the better fans in the conference. I think they really deserved to have a good season after a lot of bad seasons in a row.
They deserve it.
Exactly. You know, and I don't think there's anything else I have to say other than they really deserve to get good.
They do.
Going back to the bad end of the spectrum, it's Navy at 3-5 in conference, 4-8 overall. Incredibly, incredibly difficult schedule for them this year. Didn't do them any help. They still competed well after a really slow start to the year. Really unfortunate circumstances, the way the athletic director there tried to fire Ivan Jasper, the OC, and then Ken Niumatalolo had to like stop and like save his job, but it still had to be a demotion because of this power struggle over it. And, you know, once they found that quarterback to run the offense and Ty Lavate, that's who it was, right? I'm not going crazy. It was Lavate who came in.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry. I do that.
No, you're all right.
Like, wait a minute. Am I saying the right guy's name? They were a pretty effective offense, which is what they need to be for the whole team to function, right? And, you know, the wins and losses never came, but hey, they beat Army.
They did. That was wild.
You were there for that one, too.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think once they got, you know, they had all that stuff in the beginning of the year. There was unpleasantness with the coaching staff and the issues, you know, between the administration and whatnot. So once they settled that out, it seemed like they had a lot to play for. And I think beating Army is a great way to cap the year. I think we'll see improvement next year, but you know, Ken has been there a long time and I don't know what is his end game and how much longer does he plan on doing that? US, I guess is the question.
U.S. federal pension. I don't know.
I'd have to look into that. I don't know.
I saw a quote from him at the start of this past season that if he ever lost the fire and competitiveness, he would just quit and walk away and move back to Hawaii and just live out on the islands. But he says that's not where he's at. I think he's one of those guys who looks at the Navy job as a special place. It's the Naval Academy is a special place, and having that job is a special honor. If Power Five jobs wanted to interview him, he'd probably listen to them, but I think it would take a very special Power Five job to make him move on, and not a lot of Power Five jobs want to move to the triple option. So I think he's very happy with where he's at. I think he's, in a lot of ways, it's a pinnacle job for him.
I think the stuff that happened with the administration side and all of the controversy, I think that may wear thin and there may come a point where he doesn't have, you know, that's not part of what he signed up for. And any coach would say that, you know, so you've been doing this a long time. You're obviously good at it, but how much do you want to trade that bullshit for coaching football? So just something to think about with him, any coach that's been doing it that long and then has a year like this where those frustrations are aired to the public, you know, that wasn't in the program. We all read about that stuff and you have to wonder what's going through his head.
And it's stuff that never should have gotten to the public either, which is an issue.
It's crazy to me. So,
I mean, I think Navy's impossible team to judge every single season.
Yes.
I think they are.
Don't know.
You know, I mean, they're such an outlier in terms of what they represent as a program that I have a very hard time. I have a hard time analyzing a team that's so far, that's so different than the mold. You know,
I agree.
It's tricky. I think I do my best to understand them, but to give you an honest, to give you an honest prediction of what happens next, I don't think I can.
None of us. So we just sit back and watch.
Yeah. Moving over to Tulsa, who 5-3, 7-6 overall, surprisingly strong season, snuck in with bowl eligibility by beating an SMU team that was in turmoil at the time.
Free fall.
Like a AEW wrestling match, basically, where they're trying to get rid of Sonny Dykes a day early. And, you know, and it was in an incredibly weird atmosphere in Dallas that day. And they won pretty handily. Then they go and they, one of the more fun bowl games, in my opinion, is the Myrtle Beach Bowl. They went there, they beat an Old Dominion team that in their own right had to claw to get there. And I think I thought about what happened their season because I wrote them off obviously unfairly at the start of the year.
Yeah.
I, I think I didn't appreciate at the time how good Oklahoma State was, because they played Oklahoma State pretty close but lost. But I was like, I thought a lot about like Oklahoma State's offense at that point and being like, oh, the offense is no good. That defense was absolutely one of the top like five defenses in the country, though.
Yeah.
At the same time, you turn it around. Ohio State didn't feel like Ohio State at the time, but they were still Ohio State. The UC Davis loss was inexplicable, but, and I think that also led
that's
to me,
that's one like, you just like, yeah.
I think that's the one that also led to me like riding them a little bit harder than I needed to, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really, they had a very good time in conference. And I'm frankly very glad UCF didn't play them in conference, because that never goes well.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to not be in a conference. Like, again, side note, so glad to be, I'd so much rather play, like, even if Texas and Oklahoma stay next year, I'd rather play Texas and Oklahoma than Tulsa. Like, I don't know what it is, but they just scare the night.
They're unpredictable to a degree, you know? And
they scare me so much as UCF.
I think it's more that you don't know who you're going to be when you play them, as opposed to when you face off against an Alabama or a Georgia or an Oklahoma or Texas, you know who you have to be and what you have to do. But with Tulsa,
I think what Tulsa did,
I don't know,
a great job in the Philip Montgomery era that they don't get credit for, is establishing trenches. Like they often win the offensive line or defensive line battle. And that's something that, you know, I mean, 2 years ago, they obviously had what was an excellent, excellent defense with, you know, a couple of guys that transferred to the SEC. You know, Zaven Collins was a first round draft pick. You know what I mean? Like, that was an excellent defense. This year wasn't quite as excellent, but it was still very good because they still controlled the line of scrimmage when they needed to.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry for writing off Tulsa early. That was my bad.
No worries. You have another chance next year to not make that mistake.
I'm sure I will. You know, if I stick my hand in the fire once, I need to try it out a couple more times at least before I know for sure it's hot.
Fair enough.
Memphis 3-5, 6-6. Another team that had their bowl game canceled due to COVID stuff. And that was COVID issues in the Hawaii program. So they got a free Hawaiian vacation. Not bad.
Seth Hennigan, freshman All-American.
Okay, pretty so you're going to start with the positive. Seth Hennigan, freshman All-American.
I'm upset because Mike Montgomery's gone.
Well, I mean, he's got the FIU job.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yes. I mean,
that's not a great job, but it was not like he got fired.
I know he wanted to be a head coach. He loves being, I know that. So I'm not surprised, but I'm sad.
In a lot of ways.
He gave me a little extra to root for Memphis because I like to watch his defense. But I'm excited to see the future of Seth Hennigan. That's really what it is, right?
He should be growing.
What's his ceiling?
Exactly. Yeah. He's got a lot of growth ahead of him. No more Calvin Austin, though. He's off to the NFL. He declared for the draft. So you lose that top weapon. One of my concerns with Hennigan, and he's a freshman, so it's not a major concern, was that he targeted Dykes and Austin too much. Like, he became too reliant on 1-2. 1-2 didn't kind of see the whole. That's, as time goes on, he should be able to figure out how to like spread it around more, but he's going to have to find a new number one weapon next year. That's a whole question that you have to figure out if you're him. The defense struggled at times. 6-6 is not a record Memphis fans were happy with either. I'm curious about Ryan Silverfield's, how hot his seat is going into next year, because he inherited a team that went to the Cotton Bowl and he's undeniably regressed in two seasons. Now there's reasons for that. Don't get me wrong. There's been some attrition from transfers. There's just been those guys that got you to that Cotton Bowl graduated out of the program.
Yeah.
But I want to see them find that running game again that made those Memphis teams great, because they couldn't run the ball this year. They became one-dimensional with a freshman quarterback, and that's not good. It's not smart.
Agreed.
So I think they've got a lot of growth in front of them if they want to get to where they need to go before Memphis fans get really antsy about the direction of the team. And you know what? Memphis is also one of those teams that really thought they should be going to the Big 12 and they didn't get the invite. So that's its
they
own.
They were
other,
upset.
it's another level of anxiety. There's certain teams, Memphis, SMU, USF, those are the three I'm thinking of very specifically. There's a lot of anxiety about getting left behind in those programs. Those are programs that thought that either by their geography, their on-field success, or their facilities, or a combination of those three, that they should be going to the Big 12, and it didn't happen for them, at least not right now. And there's just anxiety about what that means for their future, because the AAC is going to change. And it's probably a podcast for a later date talking about what the AAC looks like now versus what it looks like once that change happens.
Right.
But you know what I mean? But you have to be anxious if you're in their shoes, because you're regressing at a time when the conference is changing, and that's worth being nervous about, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I still think very highly of Memphis as a program. I think they're a team that can get a lot of explosive talent in very quickly, but you know, it's a concern. And I do like Seth Hennigan a lot.
Yes, excited for Seth Hennigan's future.
Anything else?
That's it.
I was going to say, we're keeping it nice and casual. We've got one last team to do really quickly. Our most middling of average teams in the AAC this year, apparently, which this seems strange now that I look at it. It's SMU. Exactly.
No, not what we thought would happen in the beginning.
4-4 in conference. The only team 500 with a 500 conference record. 8-4 overall. That's a little bit better than a few of the teams we've already talked about. But, you know, come on. 4-4 in conference. That's where it's all about.
The first four was so different than the last four. You know, it was...
No, their season had this such a strange arc to it.
Mm-hmm.
Just the Sonny Dyke saga of it being like, all it was being reported that he was getting an offer to extend his contract by more than double what he was making. It would put him in like the $4 million plus range, which is insane money for a G5 coach, but he wasn't signing it. And when he wasn't signing it, I think you had to start to get nervous about what does that actually mean that he's not signing it? Why wouldn't he sign it? That's massive money to be ignoring, to be at the place where you supposedly really want to be in. Everyone knows you want to be in Texas, and TCU opened up, and that's your like biggest rival. You know what I mean? It's one of the bigger rivalries. That's a non-conference rivalry in all of college football.
Yeah.
And he takes the job, and we just, when we were talking about Tulsa, like that atmosphere at the end of the year around him, the hate for him. And he probably didn't even have to put his house on the market, but
you
know, yeah, you know, but he might've had to move anyways, just so that people didn't know where he lives.
Because
there's some hate coming his way.
And, yes.
You know, now he's the head coach at TCU, which I didn't think was going to happen.
But I did not. I firmly was like, that's no way.
He wouldn't do it. Yeah. That's what I said to myself is no, he wouldn't do that. He'll sign this massive extension with SMU. And then he didn't. And there's, you know, a helicopter bringing him onto the field there at Amon G. Carter Stadium is the name of their stadium, TCU, right?
Yes, I believe so.
I'm not crazy. And it was just this huge production. He's getting paid obviously more than $4+ million, because otherwise he probably would have just re-signed with SMU and extended there. TCU is, I believe, a private school. So you never tend to know the money from private schools for sure. Because they can hide
until it gets leaked.
Yeah, but because they can hide it for the most part. You know, you might have a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It's in this range, but you know, you'll never know how much Notre Dame's playing Marcus Freeman unless someone wants you to know.
Right.
For instance. Yeah, and that just, it put this like really sour taste in your mouth at the end of the season. Plus, like you mentioned, they started losing at the end of the year too. Bowl game had a chance for this redemption game at the Fenway Bowl. That got canceled. COVID issues within the Virginia program. And yeah, you just, if you're an SMU fan, you have to have this really bitter taste in your mouth at what was a really promising season. And like Tanner Mordecai is going to be back. He's really, really good. I think Grant Calcaterra is going to be back. I'm not certain. He's really good too. Losing a couple wide receivers. But Ulysses Bentley will be back. He dealt with injury issues all season. Like still have some issues to fix on defense in terms of those explosive plays that you allowed. But you know, there was a lot of positives and just got overshadowed by this huge negative cloud.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think Rhett Lashley was a really good hire.
I didn't understand it, and I still don't, because his name doesn't hold a lot of weight with me, but people seem to be excited about it. So that's good.
They're excited about it because he was the OC when Sonny Dykes first got to SMU. He was their OC.
That doesn't always mean that.
I'm just saying why.
I mean, I guess.
But he's the guy who was like on the offense that turned things around at SMU a little bit.
Okay.
And, you know, that's why. I'm just throwing it out there. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I've got nothing else on SMU for this year. Do you?
No, that's it.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, those are our teams for this year. I thought it was a fun year overall, pretty competitive. I thought, you know, it's always going to be like this where some teams have these like negative spins to their season. Some have incredibly positive ones. Doesn't mean anything for next year. Maybe, maybe not. But yeah, I had fun. We're going to start doing some off-season stuff after this, figure out what we're doing next. And yep. It's going to be a good time.
Yep. Thanks for listening. Absolutely. What a fun first year for me. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. You can find me at Dan_Morrison96 on Twitter.
You can find me at MLNEM on Twitter and Instagram. That's EMILNEM.
With the Instagram. I don't use that. all right. And I think that's everything. So we're off.